If you love America, you're among friends. If you love America, you're among friends here. ConservativeNationRadio.org.
There's no time to kill between the cradle and the grave. Father, time still takes a toll on every minute that you save. Legal tender's never gonna change. The number on your days, the highest cost of living's dying. That's one everybody pays. So have it spent before you get the bill. There's no time to kill.
Welcome to Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Media. I'm your host, Dave Vance. Inside Tennessee is sponsored by the Tennessee Action Council, an educational organization dedicated to restoring constitutionally limited government and the Judeo-Christian values that made our country great. Visit our website at tn4action.com. That's tn4action.com. The phone number to call in and join the conversation is 718-305-7176. That is 718-305-7176. Thank you for joining us tonight. We've got some great guests lined up. First up here in just a few minutes will be Bill Hopp from the Tennesseans Against Forced Annexation. Later on, we're going to have Jeremy Durham, and Jeremy's going to talk about the possibility expansion of Medicaid in Tennessee under the Obamacare program, what the impact of that would be. And then a little later on, Representative David Alexander, he'll also talk about that. He also wants to talk about Republicans going soft on the immigration issue. Got a call from David a little earlier. He may not make it. Something's come up, so we'll have to wait and see on that. Anyway, I appreciate everybody being with us tonight. And Bill will be with us. Bill Hopkins will be with us in just a few minutes. But I got a few things I want to put out real quick. The West Tennessee Reagan Day Dinner is Saturday, November 9th at 7 p.m. It's at Discovery Park of America, Union City. This will be your first opportunity to attend a private function in Dinosaur Hall in Discovery Park of America. The speaker is Rafael Cruz, the father of Senator Ted Cruz. Dinner tickets are $50. Premium ticket package is $150, which includes dinner and a private reception with Pastor Cruz from 5:30 to 6:15 p.m. Pastors in attendance will meet in the Tennessee room following the reception to offer prayers for America. Names will be added to the attendance roster as received and seating assigned accordingly. Registration will end on November 4th, that's today, and all payments must be received prior to November 9th. No ticket sales at the door. Call 731-885-8950 or 731-885-8955 for reservations. Mail checks to OCRP 3761 Parks Road, Union City, 38261. So if you want, from what I've been told, Rafael Cruz is every bit of good a speaker and maybe even a better speaker than Senator Ted Cruz. And I do know some of the people involved with getting him here and found out that one of the things that he asked for was that he be allowed to meet with local pastors. I think he's actually going to maybe the next day go to a local church or something. I don't have all the details on that. Okay, one other quick thing before we get to our first guest. Saw something on the email today. You know, Common Core is in the news a lot today. And apparently some Republicans in Tennessee have been getting some donations for their support. Now, I'm not going to name names on this show right now, but you need to look into this a little bit. Apparently the Ayers Foundation, and I'm not talking about Bill Ayers, but I'm talking about Jim and Janet Ayers, of Tennessee. The Ayers Foundation has received $1.2 million to push Common Core in Tennessee. Now, the information I got doesn't tell me where the grant came from, so, but just do a little digging there if you're concerned about who might be getting paid off. And apparently they're just targeting Republicans. I guess they count on the Democrats going along with them anyway. All right, well, Bill is on the line with us here, and we're going to go ahead and get started. Bill, how you doing tonight?
Good. David, how are you, sir?
I'm doing fine. I really appreciate you coming on. You're a pretty busy guy. I know that.
Well, yeah, we're getting ready for a next session, and we've got a TASER report that's coming due in the summer study on annexation, and look review that and see what the recommendations are, and keep the troops rallied in support of our legislative effort for next session, and hopefully we'll be able to pass the much-needed referendum to give the property owners the right to vote on annexation.
Just a little bit about your organization. It's a non-political organization working to stop forced annexation in Tennessee, working with state legislators to chain annexation laws and protect your right to vote. Tennesseans Against Foreign Annexation's mission is to defend our rural county citizens from forced annexation against their will. Currently, we have no voice in the decision for city governments to take over control of our homes, our land, our families, and our lives. And that's kind of like the preamble to your organization, the handout that you have. So how did you come to get involved with this initially, Bill?
Well, essentially, as you know, I had a career, 40-year career in direct government in California, and I came down here from an overregulated state, and I was calmly working in my office and got a call from my county commissioner that said, how come you haven't called the mayor? He's hiding under his desk. And I said, what are you talking about? He said, well, we have an annexation meeting. And I said, well, you know, don't we have to vote on something? He says, no. And went to the meeting and talked to my great senator, Senator Beavers, who was there. And she said, I told her, I said, you know, this is not right. And she basically said, no, I know. And she said, I said, can we do something about it? She said, get together with me in 2 months after I get elected. And yes, we can. And I started the movement, Tennesseans Against Forced Annexation, as a Facebook page, nothing more. And I was just appalled by the rural people that were affected by this, because it does not affect people in metropolitan areas. Therefore, they are not aware of this violation of their property rights. And that's basically how I started. And I guess I opened up a can of worms.
Well, but it's one that needed to be opened. So, you know, the impact of this, what happens to county governments whenever a little town that's close to the metropolitan area is annexed, or just some additional, even if it's not an actual little town, just additional acreage outside of the city limits, what's the impact on the county?
Well, initially, the impact is somewhat minimal because there is a 15-year revenue-sharing compact, which was written into the laws in 1999 when it was passed, PC 1101, where they split the retail sales tax. And the property tax remains the same for the county. But the county eventually, as corners of their land get eaten up, naturally, they're eventually going to lose a lot of political authority, and they are going to have to lose jobs and cut services. A lot of things eventually will happen. You know, just you start eating away at the apple, and pretty soon you only have a core. So essentially, the cities gain more autonomy over this area, and the county loses less and less and less. And eventually, what you end up with is a situation like Davidson, which has the second highest property taxes in the entire state, and Memphis, which has the highest. You get another layer of government, as if we didn't have enough layers of government to support already.
Yeah.
Then you get a metropolitan government to support, you know, with the property taxes, what, $5 or something crazy like that, and it's $7, and then in Memphis, the property tax for the city is the same as the county, like $7 or something. So it affects the rural areas more. Mr. Carter, who I worked with on the annexation piece of legislation, he's in Hamilton County. Well, down there, they go crazy. Over here in Memphis, they're going crazy. But, again, it's an issue that was never brought to fruition here locally in Nashville until I decided to do something about it, because it was a violation of people's basic property rights. And as you know, in this day and age, we lose liberties and rights every day, you know, every time you wake up in the morning. And this is just one of them. It's one small pebble on the beach compared to, you know, what we need to do, as you and I have talked about many times. But this at least will restore the dignity to the homeowner. They will have autonomy over whether they choose or not to be incorporated into a city.
Before we talk about having a voice, what is the, after the 15 years, what happens to the revenue sharing?
Well, it's gone. It's gone forever. And essentially when PC 1101 was first developed, I guess the counties and the cities, everybody got together except that one ingredient, the homeowner, the citizens. And they decided, they made a deal with the devil, we'll share and share alike. Little do these counties realize 15 years down the road, the sharing ends. And so that is how the revenue sharing came about. But it only lasts for 15 years. And then after 15 years, what you have to look at is, okay, county says, I have X amount of dollars to spend to provide services. I guess I'm going to have to raise property taxes because I have no other way to go.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's most, especially when you talk your small counties, the bulk of what they take in is property taxes. I mean, they take in some sales tax, obviously, but property tax is the bulk of it. And then the bulk of most counties go to the schools. So a lot of them are probably thinking initially, well, this revenue sharing will be good for us, but like you say, it's good for 15 years. After that 15 years, you know, they're not looking at the long-term effects, what they're going to be stuck with. And of course, their citizens are going to have to pay higher property taxes in order to do anything. Bill, I've got to take a real quick break, and then we'll get right back. And when we get back, I want to talk about the favoritism that seems to be shown towards the cities versus the counties. And we'll talk about the voting aspect in that. Okay. Our friendly local pilot in command and GOP spokesman, Duke Brooks, calls himself a paleocon, and rightly so, since it's clear that anti-communism is in his DNA. His parents were friends with Joe McCarthy, Bill Buckley, and Whitaker Chambers, so what would you expect? There's no truth to the rumor that he has a dartboard with Alger Hiss's picture on it, but you can get your weekly dosage of old-school conservatism, right-wing politics, American history, and hanger-flying radio on Radio Free America with Duke Brooks, Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Central, on conservativenationmedia.com, where America always wins. Welcome back to Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Media. I'm your host, Dave Vance. The phone number is 718-305-7176, and we are talking with Bill Hopp from the Tennesseans Against Forced Annexation organization. And, Bill, before the break, we were talking about the loss of revenue, but it seems in Tennessee that the cities have an advantage over the counties on this whole annexation issue. Can you go into that a little bit?
Well, yeah. PC 1101, which is the group of laws that were passed in 1999, I believe, 98 or 99, it was in that session, essentially it favored the cities over the counties, gave them more autonomy because at the time Tennessee was the fourth fastest growing state in the nation, and they needed to strike a balance because there were turf wars going on. The counties, again, I say, made a deal with the devil. They wanted to make everybody happy, the cities and the counties. The cities had an upper hand in the negotiating process because of planned urban growth. And we won't get into that. That's another topic. But you know, the more planning, there's a certain amount of environmental planning naturally we have to have. There's balanced development. I did this for a living for many years. There's all kinds of good reasons for planning, but the planning was all in favor of the city and very little planning to maintain rural Tennessee and the environment. So as a revenue generator, and that's what this basically is, it does generate more revenue for the cities while the counties lose revenue. So it was heavily skewed in favor of the cities because the cities were the ones that had to grow. In other words, the county can't go annex another part of another county.
Right.
So they can't grow. but a city can annex another part of the county, just like Tennessee can't go annex a part of North Carolina. And so it definitely skewed in the city's favor because they can continue to take as much county as they want, but the county can't take any part of the next county if they need more revenue. There was just a multitude. And then you get, again, everybody wants developers, including the county. A developer comes in and takes over a farm. You know, a family farm has been in there for 200 years. I got call after call after call during last session. All the calls that would come to Mr. Carter's office would eventually find their way to me, and a guy would say, hey, my farm has been in the family for 200 years. The city rezoned me. They annexed me. They rezoned me. A developer wants to come in here and put 50 homes in. Well, the county's saying, well, that's a lot of extra revenue I've got. And the poor old guy that had the farm, he's stuck between a rock and a hard place. So the cities are not the only ones at fault. The counties are too. But the counties don't speak up. With these urban growth boundary meetings, which I went to 7 of them, I was the last man standing at the end. And my mayor was very quiet and very humble while he's getting his turf divided up. And
not a word.
A very nice gentleman, by the way. He just, his hands were tied because of the law. And the way the law is written, the cities get to make the decision, and they have a number of appointed people that are on this commission from each city and some county members, but basically if they don't agree to something, they can take it to Secretary of State, and he can draw up a plan for the cities. So the counties really don't have much of a say-so in the matter at all.
So even if you get the Attorney General?
I believe it's the Secretary of State.
Secretary of State. Either way, it's just a matter of somebody else is drawing up the plan for the county versus the county really having any say. Okay. So they're still left out there flapping.
Yeah, well, and the worst thing is it's taxation without representation amongst many things, because once your county commissioner gives you up to the city and you're put into the urban growth boundary, once you're included in there, he no longer has autonomy over your future. The city does, but yet you're not paying taxes to the city. You're not getting services from the city, but yet they determine your fate, so they can take you anytime they want and actually send you a nice big tax bill. This is where it needs to be fixed. You don't have a referendum. You have no vote on it. They have the opportunity to have a referendum, but if you will read some of the reports in Tassar and some of the things that these mayors and cities have said, they're saying that essentially it'll kill us as far as growth if we have to get the citizens to vote on annexation. Nobody will ever get annexed.
Hey, Bill, I want to talk about that some more here, and just I do have to take another quick break. And I want to talk about that, the report that came back from Tassar, when we get back from the break. Don't go away. We'll be right back. You're listening to Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Media.
The Internet's official rhino hunting safari.
Whether you're on active duty, a veteran, or just admire American Armed Forces, there's no better place to get the widest variety of militaria than at Highlands Militaria. Highlands Militaria is one of America's premier distributors of Fox tactical gear and outdoor products. Veteran-owned and operated, Highlands Militaria offers new and used uniforms and insignia from World War II, Korea, Vietnam, and today. With an emphasis on airborne and special operations insignia, gear, collectibles, and uniforms. If you need to replace a cherished badge or unit patch, or just want to gear up for your next outdoor adventure, go to Highlands Militaria at stores.ebay.com/Highlands-Militaria, where you'll find the best supply of the military gear you need. Shipping is always free with one-day handling time, and your satisfaction is guaranteed. Highlands Militaria at stores.ebay.com/Highlands-Militaria. And thank you for your service.
Welcome back to Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Media. I'm your host, Dave Vance. The phone number is 718-305-7176, and we're talking with Bill Hoff from Tennesseans Against Forced Annexation. Bill, we got a caller on the line. I'm going to take this call real quick, and then I want to get back to the question on Tasser.
Yes, sir.
Carter, are you with us?
Yeah, and the reason I'm on the phone, I'm having computer issues again tonight. So I'm having to listen to the show on the phone. I can't get in the chat room, so that's not your fault. Chat room's up. I just can't get in it.
Oh, okay. Sorry about that.
And I don't know. As you know, I spoke with Bill today, and I got this friend that's got an issue over here. Whether or not he's on the listening in by phone or whether he's online looking at it, I don't know yet. It'll be up to him if he has a question he wants to bring forth. He hasn't let me know anything. He said he would just try to get on the call and listen in, okay?
All right. Appreciate you listening.
Okay. See you later.
Yep. Bill, you mentioned the Tasser report, which is – now, is that what they do in summer study? Is that a Tasser report?
Well, yes, sir. Tasser is a governor's commission that reviews a lot of legislation that the House and the Senate could not agree on, or something they felt was too contentious, or something that needed further evaluation. Tasser happens to be in charge of our urban growth policies, and I'm not sure how it ended up in Tasser, but they're basically in charge of this. And all of the annexation bills in the past got sent to Tasser and kind of never came out. Because this one was so contentious this time, and Mr. Carter worked the bill very hard, and we generated a lot of interest in it this year, they decided to do an in-depth study as part of the agreement we reached during their moratorium, the one-year moratorium. Tasser had a panel, which I was on, and I did a complete review of the PC 1101, and I was the first one outside of a government-connected agency that ever did that, and by the way, it's going to be published by the Cato Institute, and the good, the bad, and the ugly. And Tasser, I think, is getting too involved in this. We are only asking for a simple thing, a referendum on annexation. They're looking at de-annexation. They're looking at all kinds of other issues. In other words, they're looking at the whole entire PC 1101 and saying, well, it's time for a review of the whole, 15-page law. I don't think, does Mr. Carter think, we need to get that involved right now. Let's give us the referendum, and then we can look at these other things. They're mentioning de-annexation. We have not asked for de-annexation at all. That would entail very, very, there would be dire consequences if everybody tried to de-annex. Bonds would go away. Cities have invested, money in utilities. So I think Tasser, right now, they're reviewing all of the material we presented them, but I think they're going too far. They're taking a look at rewriting the whole agenda rather than just, giving us the referendum. And I think so that's what they're doing now.
You think that's on purpose? I mean, rather than just allowing, because essentially what you want is a vote. That's the main thing that we want is a vote. I've seen the literature that only three states, there are only three states, Tennessee being one, that allow annexation without a vote. That's
right.
Pretty sad that you know, in a state like Tennessee that, you know, values freedom and liberty, or always thought we did, you can get annexed and you don't have a say in it. That's not right. I mean, that sounds like something you'd get in California.
Well, believe it or not, there were four. Yeah, I worked with the California law a great deal because I negotiated. I put together big economic engines for the shopping centers and developers, and I worked with Sonny Bono in Palm Springs. You talk about a guy that was hard to deal with, but, you know, the point is the guy was smart. He made them pay for it. I think we replaced every streetlight on Palm Springs Boulevard for the guy. This is what's happened here is I think they're trying to appease everybody, the cities, the city lobbyists, and everybody else in the process, rather than looking at it as, hey, this is just a referendum. This will make everybody honest. There's a lot of good things that can happen if a city is more prepared to sell an annexation to a rural community. But again, right now we have no plan for services, for example. They say in a reasonable amount of time. Well, is that reasonable amount of time a week or, you know, 10 years? That's a problem. There's a lot of things that we're looking at, and I think that's the problem with TASER is they're looking at all the consequences, and they don't have to because, again, we're not asking for annexation. We're not mentioning anything about eminent domain. The Beacon Center is doing that's their big thing next year is eminent domain. Joe Carr has worked on that every year. But Mr. Carter and I are only requesting a referendum and nothing more. So whether they're doing it on purpose or they think, okay, it's a 20-year plan, we're into year 15 or 16, whatever it is, we have to now look at the whole thing, I'm not sure. But I do know that giving us the citizens a right to vote on their own destiny would make everything people a lot more honest. And by the way, North Carolina was the other. We had four states, and I went through the process with North Carolina, and Tim Moffitt, the House gentleman over there, and Kathy Hughes, my counterpart in North Carolina. Well, it took them 50 years or 60 years to change the law, but they did it a year before we did. So I went through the whole process. Now we're down to three.
Let me ask you, okay, in Tennessee, where would you point to, you give people an example of where this is going on? If they wanted to, you know, hey, I mean, is Murfreesboro, is it, you know, where is this going on in Tennessee, this forced annexation? Is it certain areas or pretty much all over the state?
Well, if you pick any rural county, Tony Shipley down there in Kingsport, Hamilton County, where Mr. Carter's from. That's out all of Chattanooga, that area. Collegedale. They are always trying to do a land grab. I believe they even went after Mr. Carter's property. I'm not sure. And then we got Memphis. Memphis is going crazy out there, Shelby County. It's a lot anywhere there's rural area and they're growing. That's where people are most affected by it. And again, those are the people with the least vote. The least voice is the people that live in the rural areas. Hamilton County is a perfect example. Shelby County is another example. Cleveland up there, north end of the state, that's another one. So wherever you are, if you're in a rural area, you're subject to this.
So some of those people in those places you mentioned, you know, they moved out to these rural areas. Maybe they work in the metropolitan area, but they wanted to live out a little bit, you know, for a better overall quality of life. So what's been the impact of that annexation other than the taxes? How's their quality of life been impacted?
Well, you know, it'll break your heart, especially if you're a Christian. The people that I talked to, I had a lady post on my Facebook page, her home number said, "I'm desperate. Would you call me and help me?" She said, I was annexed. You got to be desperate to do that. She said, we were annexed. They closed the middle school. My 10-year-old daughter now is having to go to a high school and bust into an urban area. And she's 10 years old. She's developing. She's going to be around 16-year-old boys. She said, I'm scared to death for her. What do I do? You know, I suggested homeschooling. What else can you do? So the schools are affected. They claim that they're not, but they are. It's a culture shock, naturally. You go out and you buy, you know, a nice acre of land, and you want your kids to grow up in a country, and all of a sudden they're in an urban environment. You have gentrification. You have the reduction of your influence on your community. You no longer are in the type of community where you have that influence with county government. Senior citizens are tremendously affected by this because they lose services that they had in the county. Yeah, they give them in the city, but it's not the same. The housing bubble, for example. Yeah, you're increasing population. Instead of spreading population out, you're bringing population in. All the crime and all the various things.
Yeah.
But just the fact that you move out in the country for a better life,
yeah.
Not to avoid taxes, but
and then the city comes to you.
Yeah, right.
Then the city comes to you. I've got to take a quick break, Bill, and then we will be right back on this topic. Yeah. One of the worst nightmares that can befall an American today is identity theft. If it happens to you, it may take months or even longer to recover from it, if you can recover at all. Don't let it happen to you. Protect yourself in advance. Sign up today with LifeLock. LifeLock is a lot more than just your standard credit monitoring service. LifeLock helps to protect your personal information using a combination of data surveillance techniques and outstanding member service 24/7, 365. There's really nothing that comes close to LifeLock. To protect your identity with LifeLock and get 10% off their great service, go to conservativenationmedia.com and click on the LifeLock banner. Network may not cover all transactions and the scope may vary. That's conservativenationmedia.com, and then click on the LifeLock banner. You'll be very glad that you did. And don't go away. We'll be right back with more Bill Hopped on Inside Tennessee.
So I'm a dog, and I just got adopted by this new human guy, and I'm starting to wonder how he got along without me. I mean, okay, something as simple as walking around the block. He's got this leash thing, and he puts me on one end and him on the other, and I'm just taking him around. I think he's afraid of getting lost. Without that leash and me guiding him along, I don't think he'd find his way back home. But it's kind of cute.
A person is the best thing to happen to a shelter pet. Be that person. Adopt. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the ShelterPetProject.org.
Happy anniversary, honey.
Oh, you shouldn't have. Wait, is that a goat?
Goats are a great gift, but maybe not for her. Go to goatsfortheoldgoat.com to give a goat and end hunger in South Sudan. So, do you like it? Goatsfortheoldgoat.com.
Welcome back to Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Media. I'm your host, Dave Vance. The phone number is 718-305-7176, and we're talking with Bill Hopp from Tennesseans Against Forced Annexation. And, Bill, before the break, we were talking about how the quality of life is impacted for these people who live out in rural areas close to a city somewhere, and next thing you know, the city has come to them, and they didn't have any say in it. Talk a little bit about the referendum. Is this referendum, just if you can fill in some blanks on that.
Well, there are essentially boiled down, for the sake of simplicity, basically you've got two ways that a city can grow, through ordinance or referendum. And as I said, 47 other states now choose referendum. They actually use the eminent domain and other issues, other ways to accrue land. But basically, right now, most everyone is through referendum. Tennessee has the option, and unfortunately, they choose to do it by ordinance, which is forced municipal annexation. And if we have a referendum, it would cover a multitude of sins. First of all, it would make the cities more accountable to the counties when they decided they needed to grow exponentially. And there's a good reason. There's a big box store and a retail, a mall that wants to come in, and they want to be a part of the city. Well, it makes good sense for them to do that. Let them vote on that particular annexation. And there's probably not many people that would turn that down. But then again, some developer, the city wants to take a large tract of land, which is four or five, six farms and some small neighborhoods, so they can develop that into some big residential complexes. Well, maybe those people would vote it down. It's a matter of making everybody honest. And, you know, selective annexations, for example, people feel as though, okay, this is a high-income area. The city needs revenue, so they're going to take this area, but they're going to leapfrog over maybe an urban area in the county that would benefit from the city services. That's why the referendum, I think, is so important. It would force everybody, the cities would have a plan for services. You know, it'd be a selling tool. I'm going to sell you this. Well, what are you going to give me in return for my dollars? And because people think, well, it's all economic. No, it's not, because then they have to provide more services. So it's not always the case where they're doing it just for taxes. But there's good and bad reasons to annex. And the referendum would just make everybody honest.
Right.
And the cities would approach the counties in an entirely different manner.
Yeah, well, right now they have the power of the state on their side, so they don't really, you know, have any reason to approach them that way if they don't feel like they need to. So now there was a last session, you got a delay in the current law, if I understand correctly, or exactly what did you accomplish last session on this? I know you didn't get everything you wanted, but you were able to accomplish something this past session.
Yeah, well, it wasn't me alone. Believe me, Mr. Carter is in charge of working the bill on the floor and running it through there. I'm in charge of the movement to keep it moving. And as you know, any piece of legislation that's worth passing has to be passed in with the voice of public opinion. Then that legislature takes it to the floor, and he has that political capital on his side. We did that in North Carolina. We had what they called the North Carolina Red Shirts. Every vote in every committee and in the assembly, these guys, they looked up, and all they saw were red shirts. And you think they would vote no? And it was an election year on top of it. So I wanted to make sure that Mr. Carter did a great job working this bill on the floor. But that being said, we, on the last day, ended up with a brokered deal instead of a referendum, a freeze for 1 year, a moratorium on annexations of residential and farmland only. And that was like pulling elephant tusks just to get that. And a summer study with a recommendation at the end of summer, the summer study from TASER. If they're going to come through and recommend a full referendum, we don't know yet. I think they probably will, but, you know, you never know how government works. How they're going to accomplish that, I don't know. if we get a referendum and everybody gets to vote on it, including the people in the city, then it's pretty watered down, pretty worthless, because people in the city, you know, they've got nothing to lose. Even they think they have nothing to lose. And so therefore, you know, it probably won't be worth the paper it's written on. So we asked for a simple referendum for the annexees only, and
right.
We ended up with a moratorium. And there are some convoluted laws around the United States but on annexations, but they all have some vehicle for the citizen to have a voice except Indiana and Idaho. And by the way, Idaho does have an appeals process where they can appeal an annexation once they have been annexed. And if they appeal it, they can actually defeat it. We don't have anything like that.
Now, what kind of help are you getting? Who's supporting this on the Senate side?
Well, we've got some great senators. Believe me, we have some great senators and some great House reps that are supporting this. We had a total of like 8 or 9 annexation bills on this, between the Senate and the House last session. So it's not like it's a topic that's going to go away. It's continuing to grow. But naturally, Mae Beavers, my great senator here in Wilson County, she helped me found.
I agree, she's great.
Yeah, she's a wonderful woman. She started as a county commissioner and worked her way through the ranks. She's all of everything, you know. So we got her basically who started leading the charge and kind of pushed me along through this. Then we have Bo Watson, who's from Hamilton County down there. He carried the bill SB 279 on the Senate side. We had Senator Mark Green, actually, was very supportive of our legislation. I don't want to leave anybody out, but we had some good senators because I primarily work on the House side. But actually, Joe Carr helped us tremendously. He's a big property rights guy, and we could have never gotten out of the first committee without Joe. And Mark Pody helped us. Tony Shipley, Mitch Van Hus. He had another annexation bill. We had my bill. We had Mr. Carter's bill. Naturally, Mike Carter. I don't want to leave him out. We had at least a half a dozen bills on each side, I think it was, and we just decided to combine our forces and go after one, and Mr. Carter seemed to have the most energy and the bill we all liked the best. So we had some great people, we need more.
You should have their support. Yeah, you should have their support, and we got to get some more support for next year. Got to do a quick read here, and then we'll get back to the topic. So after some serious thought, you've come to the conclusion that you don't believe the liberal media. Neither do we. For proof of that, Robert Garding's New Wise Conservatism show is on conservativenationmedia.com every Saturday from 4 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Central. Robert has always had a big internet following, so listen Saturday and you'll find out why. Thousands love his brand of New Wise Conservatism, and you will too. The New Wise Conservatism show with Robert Garding, Saturdays, 4 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Central on Conservative Nation Media, where America always wins. Thank you for listening Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Media. I'm your host, Dave Vance. The phone number is 718-305-7176, and we are talking to Bill Hopped on Tennesseans Against Forced Annexation. That's the name of his organization. And, Bill, you were talking about some of the senators and some of the House support you have for this bill. You know, I would think, I mean, I understand we have a lot of big cities, but Tennessee is more rural than metropolitan. And you said you had a hard time even getting a freeze on annexations. I'm just kind of surprised that you didn't have I'm surprised it's so hard. I guess that tells you how much big money is behind this in some way, shape, or form.
Yeah, the cities have a tremendous lobbyist group behind them, and they're very good. And we started, I guess you'd say, as a grassroots movement. Although I pretty carefully planned this thing, like I did. Every time I ran a proposition in California, it's a movement you plan. You know, I mean, you plan every step because there you start from day one and you carry the bill to get it on the ballot. you do everything. And so you plan ahead. And that's what we did. But I tried to drum up support. But unfortunately, the people in the metropolitan areas that aren't affected by it, they don't understand. If you said eminent domain, they would jump on the bandwagon. Since it's annexation, if there's nothing to annex in your county, they don't care.
You don't care.
The rural,
yes.
Yeah, yeah. And the rural counties, they don't have the voice that we have here in Nashville.
Well, what about the Tennessee Farm Bureau? I mean, they're a fairly powerful lobbyist group, and I would think that they would be all over this if you had any support from them.
Well, we did, but unfortunately, again, people don't understand what it takes to get something this done, like this done, that is so contentious. We need more than people sending somebody an email, you know, a blanket email, dear Mr. Senator, you know, we need people to come down to the committees. We need people to, you know, to write personal emails, to make phone calls. They came to the TASR meeting, and they are in support of a referendum. Take, for example, Nebraska. Now, they can do ordinance, annexation by ordinance also, but they cannot touch any rural or farm area. So, therefore, that limits, a third of the state. That's hands off. You would think that here we would at least settle for something like that vague. That's the problem. You know, rural America and rural Tennessee, they don't have the population to show up like we do here. So we have to get people. You know, Ben Cunningham was a tremendous asset.
He's great. He's great on anything he gets involved with.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, I've known Ben. You know, I'm a big anti-tax guy myself. You know, that's how I started my career in 1978 in California in tax reform legislation. And I called Ben when I moved down, before I came and moved here, and I said, I guess you're the guy I need to talk to. He said, yeah, we're the guys, you know. But he's been a tremendous asset. And Ken, Blue Collar Muse, Bobby, Eagle Forum, Joe Carr in the House. We have some great supporters helping us with this, move this along. But, again, it's still the Beacon Center. I can't leave them out. Beacon Center is very important. But yet, that's the only reason why we got this moved along. It's because the rural counties, they don't have the representation. And the Farm Bureau, they're good. And they tell you they support you, which they do, but they don't do any more than that.
They don't put the effort into it. Okay, yeah. Well, let me ask you this. When these areas that have been annexed, a lot of the cities, and of course Tennessee is not as bad as some places, but a lot of the cities would have stricter, you know, gun control laws, gun carry restrictions versus the rural areas. Has that been an issue?
Yes. Yeah. Very much so. There's a ton of issues like that that really affect your freedoms and your rights. Why you move to a county. And then one thing is on Thanksgiving morning, my first year down here, I hear boom, boom, boom on a Thursday morning. I'm out there, what in the heck is going on? You know, we'll put all these turkeys for dinner, you know.
Yeah.
I'm from California, you know. You've got gun laws. I mean, there are so many things that change ordinances. For example, your building codes are entirely different. Your county has much, much more lenient building codes.
And we dealt with some of that recently.
That when you move in, Dave.
I'm sorry, Bill. I got to jump here. I got to take a quick break, and this will be the last break for the hour. So when we come back, I want to pretty much give you a free hand and let you get in as much as you can before the hour is up. So don't go away. We'll be right back with Bill Hopped on Inside Tennessee.
80 million voters can pull the wrong lever, and it's still the wrong lever.
Been looking for an online gathering place? You know, a familiar screen does everything you're used to, except give you grief for being a conservative? You gotta try the Tea Party community. At TPC, you'll know how everything works from the very first minute, and you'll probably find a lot of friends who are already there. Organize, communicate, share ideas, upcoming events, pictures, and videos. The Tea Party community connects and empowers like-minded, politically conservative people like you. Sign up today at teapartycommunity.com.
Molon LeVay Challenge Coins and Wares. Similar to challenge coins used by various military units, these MLCCW coins are ideal for anyone that champions the right to keep and bear arms by highlighting the Second Amendment and the Greek phrase Molon LeVay, which translated means come and take them. Come check out our pro-freedom, pro-liberty, and pro-Second Amendment coins and shirts at MLCCW.com. That's MLCCW.com.
Welcome back to Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Media. I'm your host, Dave Vance. The phone number is 718-305-7176, and we're talking with Bill Hopp from Tennesseans Against Forced Annexation. Bill, we got about 10 minutes left here, and I want to try to just kind of give you a freer rein as possible to get the points that you want to make across. What do we need to do? What does everybody need to be ready to do when the session starts January? And January 14th is the first day of session.
Well, first of all, if they Google Tennessee annexation, I have probably every article on the first page. They can find anything I write on that, and it's always pretty current. The TAFA page, Tennesseans Against Forced Annexation, is right. It's the number one hit on Google. Whether that's kind of a dubious distinction, I guess. And they can just whack on that. I post every day on there and let everybody know property rights. And right now I'm just trying to keep the movement alive. All the legislation that will be there, they have to be ready to get behind this legislation. We do not know what the TASA report is eventually going to look like. We have an idea, but we're not sure what kind of recommendations they're going to have. We don't know how many bills that people are going to choose to run. We hope that they don't choose to run many because we, again, don't want to end up in a summer study. People should be prepared. They hear about what's going on. As you know, I might mention, you and I both have talked about another piece of legislation I'm hoping to run after we get this done, and that's the Voters' Right to Information Act, where we can get more information to the people. And this is the problem, what you and I are talking about right now. How do people know what's going on? And this is something we need to do, the notification process. And the annexation is a joke. People they put it in a throwaway newspaper, and people don't ever know about it. So if they end up being annexed, then they get a little note in the mail, hey, welcome to the town of Memphis, you know. And so people can look however they find their information about legislation. It's not going to be a headline story until we pass it. Look at the TAFA page. We've got various pages on the Internet, especially on Facebook, that are dealing with annexation. But now I started with 87 followers, and I've got 4,500 followers as in a year, so a year and a half, I guess, total. So this is how people have – the movement has grown, and I'd say that's the best way to follow it, is to go, you know, just follow it on the Facebook page. But, there's going to be a lot of contentious legislation that's being, thrown at us next session, stuff that didn't get finished last session. But annexation, I think, is going to be a pretty hot button right now.
And it is an election year, so they'll listen to people in an election year.
Yeah, how can you?
You know,
yeah,
when a private company is going to do something, when they're going to build something, like you talked about a developer, I guarantee you those developers have to do an environmental, have to have an environmental impact study done, correct? I mean, that's pretty much standard fare.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I think if a city is going to, first off, I agree with you, the county, the people being annexed should have a say. But I think also they should have to do, the people who are proposing annexation should have to do an annexation impact statement that outlines all the things that you have pointed out in your website. And we didn't even get to half of it. I mean, this would be probably about a three-hour show if we're going to get through everything.
Yeah, right.
But, you know, annexation impact statement, I think they should have to do one of those.
Yeah, you've given me my next editorial right there. No, you're right, because, I mean, there's so many things that look at culturally. If you look at Memphis, for example, the city of Memphis and that core area, they have 12 black representatives in our government. They're Democrats. They represent that community. They vote for that community. Memphis is good at annexing, you know, upper income white areas into them, so you're diluting their vote. And it doesn't matter. I'm just using that as an example. You have to look at this, this preclearance that was, we got rid of that, thank God, because it was really discriminatory. But you do have to look at what the effect you're going to have as far as disenfranchisement of voters. Us people that live in the county, we have different needs, different desires. And we can, if you do enough of that, you're going to disenfranchise a lot of people. You know, there's certain things we don't want. That's why we move out in the county. And you're a Mennonite community. Do you want to be annexed and you draw and have a lowrider, you know, pull up next to you at a streetlight? I'm using extremes, but you know, it does happen. And believe me, I love rural Tennessee. I'm really an environmentalist. I just think that we should do it for private industry rather than the government control, you know, Sierra Club and things like that. You're right. Annexation impact study would really be a benefit. It would be another tool that they could use.
Well, I mean, they force that on private companies. So, you know, the counties, I mean, the governments at different levels force that on any private organization. Well, we want to know your environmental impact statement and blah, blah. Well, so, hey, it's good for them. It should be good for us. If they're going to do an annexation that affects us, then they should have to lay all that out ahead of time. I mean, you know, if it's good enough for the snail darters, it ought to be good enough for us, huh?
Exactly. And we're a conservative state, I'm praise God, and I love Tennessee. I'm very happy to be released from the bondage of California. Praise God, amen. But you can dilute a community that has specific needs, regardless of ethnic, cultural needs, and you can actually take that autonomy away from them through annexation, and regardless of what it is, these are all things that should be studied. You know, the quality of life, the change in government, in the environment, the traffic, schools, taxes, deindustrialization, or urbanization, these things all should be done, because you don't know how much money we are spending every day of our taxpayer dollars defending these bad annexations. You would think that alone would be the incentive for them to say, hey, let's fix this thing. But unfortunately, they're not.
Yeah. Well, I hope that, you pick up even more support this year. And I got some things I'll throw at you offline that the conversation tonight's kind of made a few ideas pop into my head, and I'm sure we'll be talking more. But I appreciate you coming on, and definitely have you back. I know there's a whole lot more. I'm looking at the stack of things that you gave me, and you know, there's just not enough time. But I appreciate you coming on. Definitely have you back. And everybody, I would encourage you to go to the website, go to the Facebook page, and learn more. And, you know, it's a property. Regardless of how they're taking it, if they're taking somebody's property, it's still wrong, no matter what excuse they're using.
Yeah, that's right. That's it.
And I appreciate your work on this, and Representative Carter and the different senators you mentioned. You mentioned some good ones. I've got a good one, Senator Green, and you've got Senator May Beaver. She's excellent. So hopefully we'll get this through this year. Well, Bill, once again, thanks for coming on. I hope to have you back soon, and you take care, and God bless.
Yeah, thank you, David, and God bless you and Liberty, and keep up the good work. We certainly do appreciate it.
Well, I appreciate you. Take care. Don't go away, everybody. We'll be right back. We'll have Representative Jeremy Durham after the break.
If you love America, you're among friends here. ConservativeNationRadio.org.
For Talk Radio News Service, I'm Jeff Holtzman. Call them the Walking Dead. In the past few years, Social Security has paid $133 million to beneficiaries who were deceased. The Federal Employee Retirement System paid more than $400 million to retirees who had passed away. The trouble starts with the death master file kept by the Social Security Administration. Every day, new reports are added. The list contains 90 million reports, but surprise, not all of them are correct. President Obama has laid out ideas to improve the system. In his 2014 budget, Obama requested $22 million to improve the death reports that come in from states. Here's something you don't hear every day. Millions of Americans may qualify for federal subsidies that would pay the entire monthly cost of some health plans being offered by Obamacare. Most of them are bronze plans, the least expensive. Up to 7 million people could qualify, but federal officials and insurers are reluctant to push them too hard. Jeff Holtzman, Talk Radio News Service, Washington.
What does it take to be the leader in production systems technology? To be the one company that solves production problems at any plant, for any product, and with any technology? It takes a 30-year record of success. It takes total mastery of complex technologies with a history of delivering success every time, without fail. Only one company can claim that high ground in manufacturing line optimization, data automation, and systems integration, and that's Philadelphia Control Systems. In factories worldwide, Philadelphia Control Systems programs, software, and engineering solutions deliver optimal performance and output flow with a record that can't be matched. Any plant, any product, any technology. Philadelphia Control Systems, the leader in production automation since 1982. 800-335-9811, pcsforautomation.com. That's PCS, the number 4, automation.com.
Welcome back to Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Media. I'm your host, Dave Vance. The phone number is 718-305-7176. Well, Obamacare has been in the news a lot lately. Apparently, the rollout didn't go too smooth. Every day, they make more news about how terrible it's going. Fortunately, Tennessee did not enact Obamacare, did not set up the Obamacare exchanges. It's still to be determined whether or not we will expand our Medicaid program under Obamacare, and that's the topic of that we're going to talk about with our next guest, Representative Jeremy Durham. Hopefully, we won't go that route. Hopefully, the governor will continue to see the wisdom of not expanding it. Representative Durham, are you with us?
I'm here.
Well, I sure appreciate you being here tonight. Yeah, I hear you fine. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
All right. Well, I appreciate you being with us. Medicaid expansion, hopefully, as I said, that's not something Tennessee will take up, but you have quite a bit of information on that, and I'd say, especially as a representative, a lot of concern about Medicaid expansion. If the governor were to decide to expand Medicaid, what would be the impact in Tennessee?
Well, I think Tennesseans who have a decent memory wouldn't have to guess too much what that would look like. Back in 2005, Governor Bredesen faced a crisis. 10-year growth projections showed cost overruns of about $650 million and that the program would become 40% of our state budget. And we had to remove 172,000 people from our 10-year roles. And if we expanded Medicaid, that would put 180,000 back on the program by 2019. Personally, it sounds like a horrible idea. I know there's arguments that the funds will be taken care of in the short term, but even the hospital association's own statistics say that 4 out of 10 people don't even believe that that will happen. So I don't really think that the positives in any way outweigh the negative.
And if they did do it, what do you think in terms of quality of care? I mean, we already have an issue with that.
Well, I mean, Medicaid is just about the only type of insurance that is not proven to increase health outcomes. So obviously the quality would not be very good. And, you know, the governor's plan is a little bit different. I think it's good in the sense that he wants co-pays. I don't think CMS has budged on that. I think we differ a little bit as far as the taking the federal funds. You know, personally, there's a lot of arguments against it. You know, you're increasing the national debt, but really you're increasing entitlements. And, you know, personally,
right.
Even if there's a private, let's put it this way, we call it socialism if the government directly subsidizes a provider. But it's not socialism if the government gives it to a private company who subsidizes the provider. I don't see how that's capitalist. So I hope that we just don't do either one. I'm glad he didn't do it last year. I'm glad that he doesn't want to just expand Medicaid. But I'm hoping that we just stay where we are and we don't take on any additional cost.
Right. Now you mentioned, 40% of the budget was going to health care? Did I understand you correctly?
Back in 2005, if we hadn't changed, we were looking at about 40% of the state budget by 2007 was going to be just health care, 40% of our state budget.
Wow. And you know, that's a lot. Even if with federal dollars, you know, a lot of times federal programs start off with a certain percentage or a certain amount of federal dollars, but as time goes by, you know, they take that back. You're still stuck with the program. Sure. You're still stuck with the mandate that you have to fund.
Sure.
You would think we would have learned our lesson on that by now.
Well, I think it's pretty easy to see what the president's trying to do. Even during the super committee talks, President Obama talked about reducing federal Medicaid spending by $100 billion over 10 years. Here's how he's going to do it. He was going to blend the expansion population matching formula with the regular match. Essentially, Tennessee actually gets a pretty good match. It's roughly 2-to-1 for adults and 3-to-1 for children. But he was going to take the that match with the Medicaid expansion match and blend it together. But what that's going to do is it's going to shift the burden back onto the state, especially states like Tennessee that actually have favorable matching formulas. So this was not going to be a good deal for Tennessee if that happened. He's already talked about it during it.
Wow. Well, now, do you have any idea since last session with all that's happened? Have you heard anything coming out of the governor's office in terms of the way he might be leaning?
I don't know. I believe he's still talking to the HHS. I really don't know. He made the right decision last year, even if it was short term. I know that he's very concerned, and he should be, about the hospitals, and we hear a lot of doom and gloom theories of how the taxpayers should bail out an industry that wanted Obama's in the first place and invest our future in a broken Medicaid system. But we just have to remember that Medicaid expansion is a classic shell game. It ignores that every dollar going into the U.S. Treasury to finance this expansion is a dollar taken out of the private economy and out of every other industry. Those same dollars would have been spent to support jobs anyway. But basically, Medicaid expansion would transfer that decision about how to spend the money away from Tennessee taxpayers in the private market and give it to Barack Obama in Washington, D.C.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and, you know, with the rollout of Obamacare and all these different plans now dropping these Medicaid and Medicare, there's already somebody proposing, one of the Democrats proposed, well, they shouldn't have a choice. They should have to take Medicaid and Medicare. And with, you know, you get more and more people on those systems, and, you know, I'm sure they would do it if they could, but, you know, you can't make somebody stay in the medical profession. So if you force them to take Medicaid and Medicare enrollees, then when they decide, well, I'm just not making enough money at this for it to be worth my trouble, worth the liability insurance and everything else, the umpteen years of school to be a doctor, you know, eventually you won't have enough doctors, and the care, you know, okay, yeah, if you're operating, you'll have to take these people, but what's the care going to be like? You know, how long are you going to have to wait to see somebody?
Mm-hmm. I agree. I think just along similar lines, Marsha Blackburn made a very compelling argument, Secretary Sebelius, when she talked about the exchanges and how that some people were told that their current insurance plans that were maybe like driving a Ford pickup were not good enough and they needed a Cadillac. But apparently Washington needs to tell us what we should drive and what health care we should have. I wonder what's next.
Yeah. Well, and you know, at some point in time, you know, the states have to stand up and say no. I mean, I hope the governor says no to this, and I hope that, you know, we say no to more federal things. And, you know, part of that, too, is we've got to say no to federal dollars regardless of what they're tied to, whether it's health care or whatever. I mean,
absolutely.
You know, you can't get that noose off of your neck if you keep taking the money, and that's that's one of our problems.
Well, and one argument that we keep combating is that basically it suggests that Tennessee's money would go elsewhere if we refuse to expand. But technically the inverse is true. If Tennessee does expand, not only do we take a chance on our own fiscal future, as we've discussed here tonight, but we also increase the national debt on states choosing to govern responsibly. Personally, I want no part of increasing the national debt on states who are trying to do the right thing. And let me also be clear about, you know, the hospitals, and there's a lot of well-intended reasons suggesting that we abandon principle and take the federal money contrary to sound conservative judgment, and that's the exact same mindset that has landed our country in the fiscal straits where we find ourselves today, and I believe it's time we stopped.
And those federal dollars will be borrowed from China or
sure.
other countries that really don't like us. I mean, so we have
to
keep that in mind.
The same place we always borrow.
Yeah, I've got to do a quick read, so just if you stand by for just a second, please. If you love conservative internet radio as much as we do, then you already know about the Grit and Grace radio show. Jennifer Meadows and Josh Bernstein have been carrying a conservative message on the net for years. Now they're on conservativenationmedia.com. Join Grit and Grace every Tuesday night at 10 p.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. Central for solid American patriotism, unapologetic commentary, the latest news and conservative analysis with a good dose of plain old-fashioned fun. That's Grit and Grace every Tuesday night at 10 p.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. Central on conservativenationmedia.com, where America always wins. You're listening to Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Media. I'm your host, Dave Vance. The call-in number is 718-305-7176, and we're talking to Representative Jeremy Durham, state representative from Tennessee, and we're talking about Medicaid expansion, the possibility of Medicaid expansion in Tennessee. Now, let me ask, if the governor, is this all the governor's decision? Is it up to him, or does the legislature have to approve his decision on this?
Well, if he wanted to save dollars, he would need approval, but, you know, certainly he's the leader of our party. We think he's very thoughtful. Even if, you know, it takes him a long time to make the decision because he weighs a lot of factors, he typically arrives at the right one But no, he's already said that he would he wouldn't do it without the legislature, and I think everyone appreciated that. That's the reason I chose to roll the bill to 2014. He wants to continue thinking. Personally, I wish he was not negotiating with the Obama administration, but it's not up to him. It's not up to me. If he wants to continue to think about it, as long as he's not expanding Medicaid in the meantime, which he's not, then I think that was fair enough. So that's why I rolled the bill to 2014.
Well, let me ask you this. I mean, you know, you say negotiating with the Obama administration. You know, when you do negotiations, there's got to be some level of trust. I'm just curious who in the Obama administration he would trust.
I can't answer that. That's a good question. But he tries to work with both sides as best he can. There have been a lot of good things that have come out of his first 3 years in office. But, you know, I think he wants to insure more people. I think that argument appeals to him. I think he doesn't want these jobs with hospitals to go away. I think those are the factors that are weighing his head. You know, with me and you, I think we probably go directly to the principal, cannot continue. We can't keep borrowing and things like that. But, you know, he can be pragmatic and, you know, it's a big deal to him. If he says no, he knows the legislature will absolutely back him up and he would be taking responsibility for a lot of job losses across Tennessee. And I think that's probably weighing on his conscience. And I understand where he's coming from. Certainly don't think in principle we should expand Medicaid, but I at least, you know, see what he's thinking.
Well, let me ask you something. These hospitals, okay, they were in trouble well before Obamacare ever came along. So well before this potential federal funding through Obamacare came along, they were already hurting. So there's already something wrong. Don't just go borrow more money from China because our hospitals are struggling. Why are they struggling? What is causing them to struggle? And I'm asking the question because I don't know. I have no background in that, but I know that borrowing more money from China is not the answer.
Right. Well, here's the deal. I can't really answer as far as why they've been struggling up to this point. But basically, the hospitals, they wanted from what I understand, the deal they made with the Obama administration is they would have their disproportionate share hospital payments, basically payments for taking care of people who cannot afford care. Those rates would be decreased if more people were on Medicaid rolls. States were forced to expand their Medicaid rolls by 138% of the federal poverty line. Well, once states had the option of not doing that, they have decreased their payments for all these people that cannot pay for health care, and they don't get those small Medicaid reimbursements. They were trying to make that work. Now, obviously, Medicare pays better than Medicaid. Private insurance typically pays better than Medicare. But if they don't even have the Medicaid part, then they're finding that very difficult from a cost sustainability perspective. But we have to keep in mind, hospitals lose money on each Medicaid patient while they overcharge
Medicare as well.
Insurance carriers. Yes. This cost shifting, it essentially represents an indirect tax increase on everyone else. And expanding TennCare by 180,000 individuals would place a greater financial burden on hardworking Tennesseans who have purchased their own policy.
Right.
So the cost shifting.
I've got to take another quick break, and don't go away. We'll be right back. Any police officer will tell you that Friday nights on the beat can get fairly hectic. And now Friday nights on Conservative Nation Media will be even more interesting. We're proud to welcome retired police officer Kathy Henners to Fridays at 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 Central, with daily roll call. Kathy served her community in New York State for years, and now she serves America by keeping a watchful eye on the Muslim Brotherhood and any other troublemakers unlucky enough to cross her path. So don't miss Daily Roll Call with Kathy Henners, Fridays at 8 Eastern, 7 Central, on conservativenationmedia.com, where America always wins. She does a great show. Make sure you tune in. Don't go away. We'll be right back after this break.
Hey, liberals, why don't you try rooting for your own damn country for a change?
Every 20 seconds, another kid drops out of school.
If we do nothing,
3.5 million kids won't receive a diploma over the next 4 years. United Way knows that kids who have a caring adult in their life are more likely to make it. And the difference between a dropout and a graduate could be you. Take the pledge to volunteer now at unitedway.org. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
Hi, I'm Kathy Henners, your host on Daily Roll Call on conservativenationmedia.com. Please join me each Friday as we talk about subjects like the Muslim Brotherhood, their goals, their agenda, and how it affects our schools, our law enforcement, and our communities. As a retired police officer, I'll give you an inside look into this issue and so much more. Don't miss it. Fridays, 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 Central, right here on conservativenationmedia.com.
Welcome back to Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Media. I'm your host, Dave Vance. The phone number is 718-305-7176. We're talking to State Representative Jeremy Durham on the subject of Medicaid expansion in Tennessee. Representative Durham, we're talking before the break about the impact on hospitals and I guess hospitals, failing hospitals being one of the salient points that those who think we should expand Medicaid are using. And I'm going to ask you something. You may or may not know the answer, but I know that one of the problems with the medical profession, and this includes hospitals, of course, is civil suits. You know, I mean, doctors have to carry an outrageous amount of malpractice insurance, and some states are worse than others. Mississippi, for instance, you know, they have a serious doctor crunch there, and from what I understand, that's part of the reason. So I wonder how much of these problems could be solved by looking at other things just than, well, we need more money.
It's very possible. The funny thing is, while I didn't agree with the hospitals on Medicaid expansion, when the bill got passed, it was a tort reform bill. It basically abolishes joint and several liability, meaning that if the hospital was only found 2% liable for, call it a $10 million lawsuit, they could only be liable for 2% of the damages. It was in the books in the state that as long as there was a finding of fault against the hospital, let's say an employee went rogue, did something crazy, they could be liable for 100% if the plaintiff couldn't collect against them. So we have taken measures to try to fix things that were unfair. And we've listened to them on things like this. But as far as Medicaid expansion, I don't think that those who are going to do it. I could be shocked, but I really don't think we're going to expand it.
Now, who in Tennessee is? I mean, I think there are some in Tennessee other than the hospitals that are pushing it. Who are some of the other proponents within the state for Medicaid expansion?
Well, there's a Tennessean article about a week ago. I believe it was either last Sunday. It was about probably 7 to 10 days ago where the nurses and TMA doctors were coming out in favor of it. They were somewhat neutral last time. You got a few of the chambers of commerce we had the Medicaid hearings, and there was a list or a slide that the proponents used, and there were 10 or 11 on there. And our side responded. And actually, Michael Cannon with Cato Institute said it beautifully. He held up the slide. He asked for a sheet of paper with it on there, and he said, "Have you ever heard of robbing the taxpayers?" And or maybe he said robbing Peter to pay Paul. And he held up the slide and said, "This is Paul." But there were about 11 of them. There were two or three chambers of commerce. There was a Tennessee Hospital Association. But now the nurses and the doctors have jumped on board in the last 10 days too.
And what reasons are they given? Are they just given the state of the hospitals, the financial conditions of the hospitals, or what are,
you know,
what are the arguments?
It was only that. It was only that Tennessee article. I'd really like to talk to them. We're not in session right now, so I don't really. All I know is what was in there. They just quoted that the money would go elsewhere. Just the same arguments we've been hearing from the hospitals. They're pretty much on the same sheet of music. I mean, all the people, I mean, they're on message. I'll give them that.
You know, they always are. They are always coordinating their messages. They do that, a lot better job of that than what our side does. Now, the mm-hmm. other thing, too, you do this Medicaid expansion, and, of course, we can't seem to do much about illegal immigration. So we're going to if we were to expand the Medicaid rolls, we don't necessarily know that we're going to be helping Tennessee citizens.
Right.
You know, would there be anything that our state could do to, you know, make sure that this didn't go to illegals? I think I know the answer to that, but I thought I'd ask anyway.
Well, I think we're all familiar with a couple of Supreme Court cases that, you know, the Arizona law, and, you know, it's the Supreme Court has really tied our hands in recent years on what states can do, and a lot of that goes back to winning a White House and having the Senate and replacing some of the Supreme Court. But, you know, the states do not have as much latitude as they did, and you have to get really, really creative on the immigration issue at the state level. You know, I think we're always open to ideas from other states. Stateline.org is one of my favorite websites. You can click on all the different categories, healthcare, immigration, and, you know, I'd go on there at least twice a week looking at what other states are doing.
Stateline.org. Stateline.org.
But you can click all the different categories, and it'll tell you headlines of what states are doing. If you click immigration, there's some creative things out there.
Now, have you talked to any of the legislators from other states on these issues?
You know, I have. Medicaid expansion, we went to a couple of conferences. Senator Kelsey, who has it in the Senate, he and I have had a few meetings. And one thing that people, when we first tackled this issue, something that we didn't even realize at the very beginning, it's kind of just spiraled and spiraled as people learn more and more about the Affordable Care Act and more about the rules that have been made up every day. But there is a lesser-known and unavoidable expansion of senior care called the Woodward Effect. An estimated 47,000 people will join the program. And the Woodward Effect, it's basically factors such as a very streamlined application process, very aggressive federal outreach efforts. But rather than 90% or 100% match, the normal 65% formula will be used. So that's another $137.5 million in state expenditures during the fiscal year ending 2015 without a Medicaid expansion. That's just because of Obamacare. There's also a federal excise tax. We found another tax. There's a federal excise tax that will cost states $50 million. Basically, the tax, which comes due March of 2014, it taxes insurance providers for their pro rata share of all nationwide insurance premiums, including a state-run program. So basically, $50 million in annual state expenses out of Obamacare, and that will rise if you grow TennCare. A $50 million tax that we didn't even know about when we started the Medicaid expansion debate, we learned about the Woodward Effect. Like we knew about it, but we didn't know all the different ways that 47,000 people would get on the rolls. And then we find that in Obamacare, there's a $50 million tax on the state just for providing.
Lord.
Insurance. Yeah.
Case closed. What else would the governor have to know at this point? I mean, I don't know why he couldn't come out today and say, no, we're not doing it. I mean, for one thing, just seeing how there are no set rules. The law was written to where the health secretary writes the rules as she goes along. So even if she were honest, okay, and that's even if, and he makes a deal with her, there's nothing to prevent her from writing rules down the line that he could not have anticipated, and we're going to be stuck with a bill.
You know, there were a couple of legislators who made that point exactly as you just made it. If you take the bait, if you take that carrot You know, it's almost like a drug. We all talk about that federal money. If you take it, I mean, they write the rules. I mean, that's just so dangerous. I mean, if I'm getting a loan from a bank, I want something in writing that can't change. I don't want them to be able to alter my contract. I don't want them to alter my
Everything you do with the federal government is a everything you do with the federal government is an adjustable rate. And you have no say, and you're stuck with it. So I'm just surprised that, you know, and he's a he comes from a business background, so that's another reason why I can't understand what there is to think about on this.
If you come from a business background, you have to understand that our country's debt situation is not on a sustainable course, and if Washington ever gets serious about getting its fiscal house in order and showing the rest of the world that we're serious about doing that, well, half the state budget is federal funds. The state would have to tighten their belts. So take something like Medicaid expansion, I mean, that's going the wrong direction.
That's going to the buffet when you need to be going on a diet.
We have to stop doing things like that. Stop relying on federal.
Exactly.
Even if it pays 100%, you have to stop doing that.
I've got you. It's insane that we're even having to, that he hasn't already made a decision. Anyway, I've got to take a real quick break, and then we'll be right back on this topic. Let's assume that if you're listening to conservativenationmedia.com, you're a conservative. You love America just like we do, and you don't want to get caught short in case the leftist government drops the ball and leaves the country, and your family unable to get the basics of life in an emergency. Since that's the case, you're going to want a supply depot to get everything from patriotic gear to survival necessities to outfit and protect you and your family. And your pipeline of those essentials is right here, conservativenationmedia.com. Just go to our website, conservativenationmedia.com, and click on the Patriot Depot banner. That will take you to the world's best-known warehouse for all your conservative and emergency survival needs. Wave your flag and be ready for whatever the future holds, starting right now. Just go to conservativenationmedia.com and click on the Patriot Depot banner to join the conservative revolution, where America always wins. And we will be right back after this short message. Don't
Americans have known Tennessee as the volunteer state since the War of 1812. Now, Tennessee is leading the way in another major conflict, the war to keep America's identity, values, and freedoms intact. Even if you've never walked in Memphis or hiked the Blue Ridge Mountains, if you respect traditional American values, you should know about the Tennessee Action Council. Tennessee Action Council fights to preserve American values, defend our way of life, and protect the U.S. Constitution. This isn't just Tennessee's battle. It affects every American who loves our country and wants to pass the real America, unstained by progressive liberalism, along to future generations. No matter where you are in this magnificent country of ours, Tennessee Action Council is on your side and on America's side. Go to TN4Action.com. That's TN, the number 4, Action.com, to volunteer for Tennessee and America. That's TN, the number 4, Action.com, to stand for America now.
First thing I remember knowing was a lonesome whistle blowing and a youngin's dream of growing up to ride on a freight train leaving town, not knowing where I'm bound, and no one could change my mind but Mama tried.
Welcome back to Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Media. I'm your host, Dave Vance. The phone number is 718-305-7176. We're talking to Representative Jeremy Durham, state representative from Tennessee. And Representative Durham, we're talking before the break, and you said recently it was discovered that there's, you know, that Obamacare is truly the gift that keeps on giving, or should I say taking, because we found a tax on our state. You said was going to be how much?
$50 million just for providing insurance. It's on insurance companies, even if it's state-run.
Per year.
$50 million per year, that's correct, a federal excise tax. Basically, there is a number of all a tax that is assessed to every insurance policy across the country, whether it's provided by a state or private company. And you divide that pro rata, and it's right about $50 million for the state. And that's if you don't expand Medicaid. It's higher if you do.
Good Lord. Okay. Now, I'm just curious, who found this in our in the state? Who found this provision?
I'll tell you who told me. I sat down with Darren Jordan, the state tenant care director, just asking a lot of questions. He's the one who told me. He's in the Haslam administration. He explained it. Everything I know has come from him.
Okay, so somebody. Okay, so he should, yeah. All right, so we do have somebody looking at this. And imagine you probably need a team to go through all this junk. Now, do they periodic updates to the legislature on what they're finding?
They're very accessible. I know that when I saw them, they were always asking if we needed anything. I don't know that when we're out of session, because people are scattered across the state, I don't know that the other few months that, you know, you're ever together in a room, but it's pretty easy to get information. I mean, I think I got a meeting with the director within 2 days of asking for it while we were in session. So they are accessible. I absolutely think that you can get a number if you need it from them.
Right. Now, do you think when the governor makes the decision, you think he'll make it early in the session, or he'll take the whole session to decide, or what?
I have no idea. He's not made a timetable. I believe, this is just looking at newspaper articles, I believe he said it would be a stretch if he had a recommendation by January. I believe the sticking point, from what I understand, that he's having with Sebelius is the fact that she doesn't want anyone on Medicaid having a copay. He wants them to have some skin in the game so that they have incentive to be responsible, which obviously is a conservative principle. But she is not okay with that. And I believe that is where they are stuck, from what I understand.
That's their only sticking point?
I don't know, but that's one of them, I know.
Okay. Well, let me ask you this. Would you be able to convince you and obviously other legislators, possibly convince him to wait longer, you know, maybe wait another year? I mean, every day it gets worse. So what's the rush? It's going to cost us. We know it's going to cost us money either way. It's going to cost us more if we do play with the feds. At least wait another year. See what else
happens. Well, good thing about waiting another year, if we can do that, then at some point the 3 years at 100% funding are going to run out. So if you don't want to expand it, you really don't want him to make a decision this year, because then we could do the same thing this year that we did last year. And, okay, well, if you're not going to do it without legislative approval, then we'll just go home and roll it to the next January. I mean, sooner or later, the federal government, I mean, it's only paying 100% the first 3 years. I mean, if we do that, we've already done it once. If we do it two more times, then he'll be out of. I mean, the biggest incentive they had was it was free for 3 years. Of course, I think we all know that taking a government program away is a heck of a lot harder than adding a subsidy. So I don't want to get us in that position again. But that was one of the selling points, is it doesn't cost anything right now. But they lose that argument if you wait 3 years.
Well, you mentioned a minute ago, and I've heard this before from other legislators, how much money Tennessee takes in from the federal government. And I think you said, what, roughly half of our operating budget? Was that
accurate?
About
half of $33 billion. It's about half, yeah.
Okay, so is anybody making because obviously everybody sees the Titanic's heading for the iceberg. So is anybody making plans?
Well, the best thing we can do as a state legislature is stop relying on the federal government. If, like I said before, if we get our fiscal house in order in Washington, it's no secret that the money, if you're actually trying to solve the problem, is in the entitlements. It's, Medicare, which until the last 5 years was probably the most popular social program there's ever been. Medicaid, if they start cutting that or tinkering with the matching rate, like I mentioned earlier, that Obama has talked about doing, that is going to come right back to the states. Medicare and Medicaid are two obvious places where that you could make a change. And if they change Medicaid, that could drastically impact state bottom line. We have to prepare for it. And by expanding Medicaid is not a good way to do that.
Right. Well, I just, you know, obviously we hope he doesn't opt to expand it. It concerns me that the only sticking point he can find is the copay. I mean, like I say, I don't know how you deal with somebody like Sebelius or anybody in the Obama administration, but, you know, the whole 50%, you know, there's got to be a plan. I mean, like I say, we all see where we're headed, and you can't rely on the federal government. They're not going to get their house in order. And so the states now, it would seem to me like they would go ahead and start planning for that. I know that's not easy for a politician to do, go tell somebody that, you know, we're going to disenroll from federal program X, but we see it's coming. We have to do it. The feds have proven themselves irresponsible to include, unfortunately, way too many from our state. Has there been any mention of this? Has anybody talked about this?
I mean, some have. You know, when you have short-term funding to create long-term programs, I think Race to the Top would probably be one example. Medicaid expansion would be another. I do think our legislature has learned from Race to the Top. I think many of them were ready for Medicaid expansion. I still don't think it has votes. If there was a Medicaid, even the Tennessee plan, I don't know. You know, I'm not sure. You know, I look at that as pretty much Obamacare 2.0. It's basically Medicaid expansion with copays. I understand that private insurance is going to be used, but if you're still taking the federal money, you're still increasing entitlements. I mean, who cares if there's a private company involved? I mean, it's still Medicaid expansion. It might as well be.
Right. You said if we put it off two more years, then there won't be the federal matching funds, and so that would hopefully
100%. It phases out until 2020, where it supposedly ends up being 90-10. But I mean, the president has already talked about backing off that. He has already talked about a blending match rate. So states like Tennessee that have a 65, as opposed to like a, I believe the nationwide average is in the 70s. So we actually have a pretty good, a favorable one for the state. If they blend that and give everybody the same matching rate and then blend it from the 65 to the 90 and put it somewhere in the middle, that's going to greatly increase the cost in the state.
Yeah.
I mean, it'll be dramatic.
Well, we don't have the money for that, that's for sure. Got to take a quick read. Now, I know that we've already gone over the amount of time we talked about. Do you have a few more minutes?
Sure.
Sure. Okay, well, let me do this quick read, and we'll get right back. There can be nothing more outrageous to an American than the idea of an innocent person being wrongly convicted for a crime they didn't commit. But as they say, sunshine is the best disinfectant. We're proud to welcome A Just Cause with Sam Thurman and Cliff Stewart to Tuesday nights on conservativenationmedia.com. Sam and Cliff take a hard look at what happens when the wheels of justice trample the rights of innocent Americans. These are real cases of real people who are actually innocent, but who were wrongly convicted. Join us for A Just Cause, Tuesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Central, on conservativenationmedia.com, where America always wins. Listen to Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Media. I'm your host, Dave Vance. The phone number is 718-305-7176. And we're talking to Tennessee State Representative Jeremy Durham about Medicaid expansion in Tennessee. This session, he's already indicated, the governor's indicated he probably would not announce anything in January, but you guys will probably, once you're back in session, hear a little more about which way he's leaning. You mentioned earlier that you felt that people would or would not go along with an expansion. I know that's kind of hard to judge.
If it's just assumed like Medicaid expansion, I don't think they would go along with it. I think the Speaker of the House said it correctly when she said, we don't have an Arkansas legislature which would go along with it. We have a Florida legislature which would say no to their own party, reject Medicaid expansion. But it depends how it's sold. If it can effectively be sold as something that's not Medicaid expansion, if people are actually convinced that just simply adding an intermediary between the government and a provider, if they're convinced that that's somehow capitalism, then maybe it has a chance. I don't know. It's really hard to say. A lot of it's how you sell it. You know, obviously I would say this is still Medicaid expansion. That is all the bad. You know, it still increases the national debt. It still increases entitlements. It still puts all these people on the rolls for money that even 4 out of 10 people in the hospital poll say won't be there later. And if you, you know, have any kind of economic sense, or you can use a calculator, you see what's happening in Washington, you realize that they're making a promise that they can't make. And this is something they have a track record of doing. So we would still have the exact same message we would have even if it were Medicaid expansion. I mean, I think the reasons are still the same.
Well, I hope most of the other legislators feel that way. And I hope that, you know, with everything that's going on with Obamacare, that maybe the governor will finally decide that, you know, you just can't trust this administration. And like you say, it's not a conservative thing to do. Even if the federal dollars at whatever rate were promised and materialized, you know, like I say, it's still borrowed money. And it looks like right now, just with the Obamacare, from what you're saying, we're going to add 47,000 to the rolls of Medicaid anyway.
Yep.
Hard to tell what you'll find out in the next month or between now and when session starts, what other hidden costs are in there. And how are you guys going to budget for the 50 million? I mean,
you know,
how's that
going to
be figured into the equation?
Is David Alexander, is he tonight or is he another night? Because he is on budget sub, and I have an idea, but I think he would be the best one to answer that. He is on that budget subcommittee that's very, very powerful, and that is perfect question for David. I do think that we were over, we took in more revenue than we thought, so obviously you could use that. It's not a very long-term plan, but I'm not really sure. I assume they would use that the first year, but I don't know. I mean, a lot of it's up to the people on finance.
Right. Actually, he was supposed to be on tonight, but I got a call from him earlier, and he's out of range, so he's not going to be with us.
That's a great thing about the rural districts.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if something came up or whatever, but I got a text from him not too long before we started that he wasn't sure he was going to make it back and didn't have good comms. So, but I'll definitely try to get him back. Now, what committees are you on?
I'm on insurance and banking. Since Medicaid is health insurance, it goes through insurance and banking. I'm also in local government. So annexation went through there. Wine and grocery stores went through local. But insurance and banking is exactly what it says. I was glad. I thought this bill might go through health, but it actually went, just because it is insurance, TennCare, it went through insurance and banking. So I was happy that it went through that committee.
Okay, now, the bill you're referencing is one that was against expansion of Medicaid, correct?
Correct. Senator Kelsey and I sponsored legislation that would prohibit the state from expanding Medicaid. So you'd have to take that law off the books in order to do that. So it would settle the – there wouldn't be any negotiations with the Obama administration if that bill passed, because it would be illegal.
Well, hey, it's got my vote, and I bet you it's got the vote of most people in Tennessee. But I guess, are you going to file it right away, or are you going to wait and see what the governor does? Or,
well, it's actually in calendar rules in the Senate. Senator Kelsey got it out of Commerce. Mine is still in subcommittee. It was a big deal that the governor did not expand it last year. And I thought that was at least worth rolling it to January, since he can't really expand it without the legislature. He said he wouldn't do anything without the legislature. So I thought it was reasonable to just roll it to January. It is an election year. He has to go in front of the Republican primary voters again in August. So I thought it was reasonable to roll it to January. And I'm not saying that we won't run it this year, even if no decision is made. I'm not really – I'll listen to a lot of people on that, the people that think like we do. It's not out of the question that we would go ahead and run it this year.
Well, sounds like great legislation. I mean, you know, just in case the governor would be inclined to make the wrong decision. I know a little bit about Senator Kelsey, and I won't go into some of my negative thoughts, but I'll tell you what, I did see something in the paper that I liked apparently he gave, this was I think in the newspaper or one of the blogs, Kathleen Sevilla's was at one of these events, and he gave her a, was it Internet for Dummies or something along those lines?
Websites
for Dummies. So I'm going to give him kudos for that. I give him a hard time when he does the wrong thing, and I can spend some time on that.
There was a federal agent bill, and he acknowledges that. It's one of the, I wasn't on judiciary. There's a lot of fights on judiciary, and when you're a lawyer, a lot of times you look at things a lot differently. I try to pride myself in being able to. The thing is, lawyers look at things process based, and non-lawyers look at them as results based. And I think the overwhelming majority of people look at things results based. So I very much try to legislate like that. He and I agree on most every issue, but every now and then there's a process-based and results-based distinction where we kind of get off course. But I'm telling you, he's not a mop. He's very much a conservative. We disagree here and there, but I'll tell you, he's one of the most conservative ones up there. It would be difficult to find somebody that would be down the line better than he would be.
Okay. Well, I mean, I guess my biggest beef is, when he made the comment that the Supremacy Clause pretty much trumps the 10th Amendment, and that since the amendments came after the main body of the Constitution, that, kind of implied they don't count as much. So that bothers me that a lawyer would make that
statement. But you're amending the Constitution, so it's equal. Yeah, absolutely. I completely understand that. And I think he would probably explain it a little differently today, but we'll see if it comes back up.
Yeah, well, I'm hoping it does. Because the bottom line is, and we talked about this earlier, you mentioned this, the states don't have a whole lot of wiggle room. But the truth is, the states, if you remember in the Roberts decision on Obamacare, one of the things he mentioned, matter of fact, one of the reasons the states have the option not to do Obamacare, not
the
to commandeering set up clause, exchanges.
Yeah.
And he said that, states are sovereign entities, but to act like it. Sometimes they have to, they have to stand up for themselves. And, I think states have to.
The federal government could not force us to expand Medicaid because that is the is the federal government forcing us to do something. Absolutely. I think that's consistent with Roberts' opinion.
Yeah, and I think we need to do more of that, and I hope to see more of that this session. Got to take another real quick break if you can hold on with us. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
If you love America, you're among friends here.
Hi, I'm LeVar Burton, and I'm proud to be a book person. Every child deserves to have access to books because children who grow up with books invariably do better in life than children who do not. How do I choose a book? Is it the cover? Sometimes it's the cover, sometimes it's the title. I guess I'm pretty visual, so it's a combination of those two. The first book I remember was Captain's Courageous. When I finished that book, I had become so involved with these characters. So here's the thing. If a book's really, really impressing me and the writing is really, really good, I will peek and see what the last paragraph is. Because the endings of books, if it's really, really well done, that ending, that last thought should rock you. I am a book person, and if you're a book person too, read to a child and spark a lifetime of ambition. Join me at bookpeopleunite.org because reading is fundamental. A public service announcement brought to you by Reading is Fundamental, Library of Congress, and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Media. I'm your host, Dave Vance. The phone number is 718-305-7176, and we're talking with Representative Jeremy Durham from Tennessee. And Representative Durham, hey, I appreciate you being with us tonight. I know we've gone way beyond the amount of time we talked. Only got a few minutes left. What do you have planned legislatively for this session? What bills are you going to champion?
Well, anytime that you get out in front an issue as important to our state sovereignty as Medicaid expansion, that is, I'm going to absolutely maintain the watchdog status on that. Anything that would hurt our state sovereignty, I'll fight. But my main one will be Medicaid expansion. I'll also be just looking for ways to cut red tape on small businesses, try to fight taxes that are bad for our economy, things like the Hall income tax. I think that's very bad. Professional privilege tax. Those are just taxes that punish job creators or people that are putting things back into the economy. So just looking for good public policy, looking for more economic freedom, and just maintaining our state sovereignty.
Well, you mentioned sovereignty, you mentioned taxes, and first thing that popped into my mind is Obama just decided that unilaterally he was going to do an executive order, and we're going to fight global warming. We're going
to
prepare for global warming.
He tends to do that, doesn't he?
Yeah, yeah. So I imagine taxes are coming our way. I imagine other mandates and costs are coming our way, and it's going to infringe on our sovereignty. I'm sure it'll infringe on our individual freedom, and it's going to hit our pocketbook. So going back to the Roberts decision, where states are sovereign entities, sometimes they have to act like it. What do we do? I mean, I guarantee you that we're going to hear something on this pretty quick.
I am hoping that a couple of these executive orders will make it to the Supreme Court, because he has abused that. He has abused executive orders so much that, I really feel like if they got a hold of one or two good examples, that many of his executive orders could be wiped out. I mean, as long as they got the right case or two in front of them, he's just abused it so many times that I really I'm hopeful that his ability to do that would be in jeopardy. But I'm just waiting for the right case to go up there regarding his executive order, because I really feel like that they might slap it down on it.
Okay. And that would be great, but, state sovereignty implies that we don't necessarily, our decisions don't necessarily hinge on the Supreme Court.
Sure.
At some point in time, states have to say no. And I think if we don't say no pretty soon on some things, there's not going to be anything left to say no to.
I mean, there are, just like one of the first things I said, the state's ability to, and not just immigration, a number of different things. It's just that little, if you look at that bubble where, back in the day it was 80% state, 20% federal, it's flipped. And it gets, state part gets smaller by the day. We just have to remember that the federal government did not create the states. The states created the federal government. And I really feel like we have to get back to basics. And state sovereignty is becoming it's always been a big deal, but it's really becoming a focal point. And there are a lot of legislators talking about it. There really are. They're actually doing the Government Operations Committee is now having just a separate subcommittee to talk about issues that affect the Constitution. And so bills Judd Mancini he was one of the architects behind that, and I'm really glad that he did that, because he's very good with issues like that. A lot of the conservatives, we have different issues. Like, obviously, I do a lot of health care law, so I'm familiar with Obamacare, so I've attacked Medicaid expansion. Judd, he understands inside and out the 10th Amendment. So we all try to work together. We figure out who's an expert in what area. And but that is a very, very important one. And if you haven't talked to Judd yet, I encourage you to get with him. He's really good.
Oh yeah, I've had him on a couple of times, and we'll have him on again. Matter of fact, we're going to have him on once a month in reference to that committee. And the next committee meeting is November 12th, 9 o'clock, I think, room 16 there in the plaza. They're going to do a follow up from the first meeting and introduce some new issues as well. But the states are going to have to stand up. If the governors won't stand up, the legislators will kind of have to force their hand. That's where we are.
Unfortunately, it is. It's where we are.
Yeah. Well, once again, thank you for coming on. I hope to have you back. I hope I didn't wear you out. I know we talked about 30, 35 and ended up being every bit of an hour, but I do appreciate you staying on.
Enjoyed every minute of it. It's always good to talk to another conservative.
And I'd like to have you back, and thanks for what you do, and take care.
All right. Thank you.
All right, next week we will have a special veteran show. You'll hear more about that in the week. Thanks for tuning in. Take care.